Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. Do you need a new liver? Why not go to France? A hip replacement? You could go to Japan. According to a leaked document, globalized healthcare is coming. We take this from The Age out of Australia. They report the highly secretive Trade in Services Agreement, TISA or TISA, the highly secretive trade and services agreement negotiations that will resume in Geneva this coming Monday, February 9th, will include discussion of wide-ranging reforms to national public health systems to promote offshoring of healthcare services. But health unions and trade experts say the negotiations, which are being led by Australia, the U.S., and the EU, could lead to a massive growth of medical tourism to the detriment of investment in Australian public hospitals and local healthcare. The leaked discussion paper, published by the non-government organizations Associated Whistleblowing Press and Public Services International, has for the first time revealed TISA countries are actively discussing measures to boost the cross-border delivery of health services. The leaked paper, concept paper, rather, on healthcare services within TISA negotiations, reportedly tabled by the Turkish government in negotiations in Geneva last September, argue there is, quote, huge untapped potential for the globalization of healthcare services, end quote, creating massive business opportunities from what is a $6 or $7 trillion per year industry. This proposed regime, James, would involve health professionals authorizing patients to be treated in other TISA countries for reasons including long wait times in the home country or inadequate expertise for specific medical problems, and the patient's costs being reimbursed through their home country's social security system, private insurance coverage, or other healthcare arrangements. Education and training investments may be diverted to benefit foreign healthcare users rather than local citizens and taxpayers. That is a quote from the whistleblowers. 50 countries, including Australia, Canada, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, the EU, which represents 28 member countries, and of course the United States, are engaged in the TISA negotiations, which have been going on as far back as 2013. So, James, while this story comes from The Age and comes from the Australian perspective, you got to imagine it in all the other countries around the world being involved. So right here in the States right now, they're seemingly only moments away from lining everybody up and forcibly injecting them for the latest threat-aganda health scare, this being measles right now. But as for the medical tourism being discussed right here, right now, James, something tells me this isn't going to save like your uncle's life. And it would give the so-called elites not only trillions and trillions more for their big pharmaceutical industrial complex, but, you know, it could mean an extra lung or a heart whenever Kissinger or Cheney need it, right?
As if they don't have that already. But yes, yes, I see what you're where you're going with that. But let's put it into perspective this way. There is no political question to which the answer freedom is inappropriate. And in this case as well, I think that the idea of being able to shop around anywhere in the world for medical services, well, who's going to stop me from doing that? And under what privilege or authority? The real insidious part of this is that for those of us living in these socialized healthcare systems, then it is the state that would be paying for people to go to whatever, a foreign country to get a hip replacement or whatever it may be, which of course is ridiculous. Asking everyone in the country to contribute to send someone halfway around the world to do something that could be done at home is a stupid and inefficient way of doing it. So yes, I agree. As long as we're in this statist system with statist healthcare, socialized healthcare, then yes, this is a terrible thing. The real answer, of course, is freedom, to actually free the healthcare system so that people can choose whatever treatment they want from wherever in the world they want and pay whatever price they negotiate with that person. I think that's the only real answer to the healthcare problem. But the TISA agreement in general is an interesting one, and one that I hope people are paying attention to. This is, of course, what we were talking about in the New World Next Year episode starting this year, where we talked about how 2014 was a year where these TPP and TISA and all these other agreements continue to be worked on and continue to be largely ignored. We'll throw in a couple of flashbacks. I think one that is exceptionally important here is the WikiLeaks release back in June of last year of the financial services chapter of the TISA agreement that that exposes, amongst other things, the fact that, of course, they want to get their credit default swaps and all their exotic financial instruments into every reach and every corner and every nook and cranny of the world. But also, the U.S. is pushing strongly, according to this draft negotiation document, for the data sharing. What we've talked about before, the secret negotiations that are going on to try to get personal tax and income information from anywhere in the world for the purposes of, for example, the IRS coming to hunt you down. And as we've talked about again, that is the fundamental building block for a world tax structure. There couldn't be a global tax without that type of infrastructure in place. So these are the really insidious parts of the TISA agreement. I hope people will start peeling back some of the onions, layers of this onion, and hopefully we'll continue to stay on this case as new details start to emerge.
And we will include all those links. Of course, as we always do, everything sourced and cited here will be included in the show notes for folks to go out there and do more research on their own. And James, I just wonder if this kind of consolidation, when we see it in the banking and in all these levels, might not be long before you're in some sort of Obamacare place with someone asking, why come you don't have your tattoo? So with that in mind, let's look at our second story this week out of The Independent, as China is forcing its citizens to use their real names on the internet. Chinese internet users will be forced to use their real names on social media and blogs in line with a new rule from Chinese internet regulators. It comes on the back of recent news that the Great Firewall, that's China's internet blockage, climbed even higher last week with the blocking of virtual private networks, VPNs, that many use to get to banned sites. Since 2012, Beijing has required that internet companies keep the real names of some users, but the country has now rolled the rule out to blogs, social media, and website comment sections and will be applied more comprehensively. Many such websites give internet users their only way of expressing themselves freely, given the strong crackdown on discussion on the internet and elsewhere. The rules also require internet services for the first time to have users sign a contract that includes a pledge to refrain from illegal and unhealthy activity. The Cyberspace Administration of China, the group that runs the Great Firewall, said the rules had been instituted to stop username chaos. That's using parody accounts of famous people such as Putin or Obama, promoted vulgar culture, and helped people commit fraud, the CAC said in a statement. James, which I find kind of funny, I would think just being the regular old real Obama or Putin would let you commit fraud. But James, isn't this the kind of Chinese-style internet that the powers that shouldn't be, like Lieberman or Rockefeller, of course, Jay Rockefeller from West Virginia, all those guys who bemoan the internet, isn't this what they'd like to see all around the world?
It absolutely 100% is, and I wrote about this in an article not too long ago about China and the U.S. Frenemies with Benefits, where I talked about an internet conference that took place between these different groups, that are funded by Microsoft and some of the big U.S. software giants, and the Chinese state agency that controls the Chinese Great Firewall. And just, I mean, it's so blatant and in your face that they are trying to construct these various traps to crack down on the free and open internet. But the really disgusting part of this story to me is not even what the Chinese government is doing, because this doesn't surprise me in the least. I mean, we know that they track and control and surveil and everything that goes on online in China, and this shouldn't be surprising at any rate. But what disgusts me about this is that I still continue to get people trying to tell me that China and Russia are going to be the saviors of the world, the BRICS are going to be, because they care about the people and they want to give infrastructure and free money from heaven to people, all of this nonsense, when these blatantly tyrannical societies are being completely top-down controlled. We keep getting stories like this that show these layers of control, that if this was happening in the US, if it was Obama doing this, people would be up in arms. This is tyranny. This is terrible. But it's China. Who cares about the Chinese people? I mean, whatever. Just love it. It's the BRICS. It's good. Again, this is just more part of the New World Order system. They have two cops, the good cop and the bad cop, and they just play one against the other, and it is a dialectic. I'll just throw in this related story from the South China Morning Post that was recently tweeted out by our friend Brock West. India and Russia back China's call for New World Order, in which they not only back a call from China for a New World Order, but they also celebrate the creation of the United Nations. And, I mean, it just doesn't get more blatant than this. The BRICS are not your friends. And I have a lot more to say about this. In fact, I'm going to do a BRICS in the New World Order episode of the podcast in the future to lay out some of this, because I think it's important for us to understand it is a false choice to put our backing behind these people. And just one thing that people should keep in mind, the BRICS concept itself is literally a creation of Goldman Sachs. And if you don't know that history, you don't know where this comes from, I suggest you look into it. And again, I will have more to say on this in the future.
James, I'm just trying to remember, as you've now mentioned BRICS, I think we have had a segment on New World next week that was titled BRICS for a New World Order. We'll have to check that, and we will, of course, include it in the show notes. So for our third and final story, it's only a hop, skip, and a jump away. And again, we are trying and have succeeded in some way, shape, or form in this 2015 to have some kind of positive news. We call it good news next week. Now, it's not always, as James and I kind of joke, an unmitigated good, but it's something in the neighborhood of solution-oriented stories that we want to try and move more towards. So, James, the FCC says my city could build a public internet even if the state says no. This posted to my own cyberspacewar.com, and it's coming from Vice. The Federal Communications Commission is going to allow two cities to ignore state laws that ban them from building community-owned broadband networks, according to FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler. This is big news for Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Wilson, North Carolina, and it's a signal to the other cities in the 21 states that have laws restricting municipal broadband that they can start considering their own networks without worrying about their state laws. Some quick background. Many cities that are poorly served by existing cable and internet companies decide to build their own networks. It's a particularly attractive option for cities and towns in rural areas. But many states have laws restricting the practice, which were mostly lobbied for by telecom companies. Wheeler and Obama have said they'd use a process known as preemption, in which the federal government invalidates part of a state law, at least on a case-by-case basis. Wheeler decided that North Carolina's and Tennessee's laws could be preempted. The full commission will vote on this decision a little bit later. And James, of course, this comes on the heels of this new alleged sort of net neutrality push coming from the FCC. And again, we'll include that in the related links. So this is exciting for those cities, but it doesn't mean that the floodgates are open. Federal preemption is a serious matter, so it has to be done on a case-by-case basis, an FCC spokesperson told Vice. It's not like you do one and then you can clear them all. There still has to be examination of the facts, which could be problematic. Chattanooga and Wilson both had already been operating their own networks. These petitions allow the cities to expand their services to nearby towns, and so they've already got experience in the telecom and telecom law space, which is important considering that these petitions that must be filed are roughly 60 pages long and are rather lawyery. Presumably, future petitions would have to be similarly thorough, which is a pretty big hurdle for some small town to jump over. The lawyer problem has been pointed to before as one of the reasons why many cities never attempt this in the first place. So it is good news, at least in Tennessee and North Carolina. Now, James, I know what you're going to say, so let me take a crack at it. This may be good for those particular cities, but this still keeps us in that mind space of asking and begging daddy government for the permission to do anything. And even when we're submitting to some Kafkaesque bureaucracy that are only accepting this so that you won't believe that you have left something untried. And when you have the federal government preempting state laws, James, you don't really live in a land of law in the first place. How is that?
You took the words out of my mouth, my friend, so good job. I hate to be so predictable, but in some ways it's good to be consistent, so I'm glad that you hit the nail on the head, because you're exactly right. We have to go begging to the master to allow us to do things like this? No, that's not the way free human beings operate, and that's not the way we should be operating. As you point out, you have to get these lawyery 60-page documents together to ask for permission, and all of this nonsense and hula hoop jumping in order to try to get get permission to do something that you have a natural right to do yourself. And unless we really understand that and act as free human beings, I think we'll never really get to the heart of this matter. But I'll also just throw in one other thing. Let's just throw in the official biography of this Tom Wheeler, who is the valiant fighter for the publics and net neutrality and all of this at the FCC. Yay, he's going to be the savior. Oh, wait, what is he? Oh, he was the former president of the National Cable and Telecommunications Association, the former CEO of the Cellular Telecommunications and Internet Association. He was inducted into the Wireless Hall of Fame for his work in promoting the wireless industry. He was also inducted into the Cable Television Hall of Fame, the only person to be inducted into both halls of fame, because he is an industry insider. He is an industry puppet sitting there in the FCC proclaiming that he's going to be regulating these industries. Baloney. Baloney. Can you spell baloney? This is such garbage nonsense. And if we, again, if we put ourselves in the position of letting the federal government decide whether or not we can have broadband free wireless access or whatever, then the game over. I mean, if we get into that position, that mindset, that mentality that we have to beg for scraps from the master's table, then we are slaves. And I'm not a slave. I'm a free human being. So don't ask for permission. Don't ask for orders from headquarters. Just go out there and build it yourselves.
James, let's tie in a few other good news stories. How Nebraska citizens took control of their energy grid that would, I believe, still file under sort of solutions-oriented stories. And one that I like, because I had noticed this on Twitter and it had already kind of bugged me. Koch was running this hashtag make it happy PR stunt, basically decrying that the internet's so mean, it's full of bullies. And I said, well, maybe it's because it gives people the opportunity to call you out for your toxic garbage. So Koch dropped their hashtag make it happy PR stunt today after being tricked by a bot into tweeting about Mein Kampf. You gotta love that. It reminds me of the story we covered a while back, James, where Cheerios had to remove an app during a fury of anti-GMO backlash, where they gave folks the tools to sort of make new figures and signs and memes using the iconic Cheerios lettering and fonts and yellow background. And of course, they turned it into calling them out for the GM, General Mills, genetically modified corporation that they are. The last note of good news, James, will tie in from our aforementioned good friend at Brock West. His Community Garden Journal is still going and still growing, and he's posted week 3 and 4. And again, we commend him for all that work in his community garden, doing it right there. And again, these are all the things that we're sort of trying to do with alternative media. James, I also want to tie in one other last blast of news for folks that use hashtag New World next week. We wouldn't be able to get a lot of the news that we do get. And again, it's about sharing a lot of this information in an open source kind of style. New allegations of Saudi involvement in 9/11 coming from Zacharias Moussaoui, who is believable in whether it depends on it benefits the state or not. Meanwhile, Amy Pascal is out at Sony Studios following the virtual flag terrorism event, popularly known as the Sony hack. Rupert Murdoch gets off scot-free in the U.S. over phone hacking. There will be no charges. And Brian Williams of NBC News here under fire for the first time in his life as his Iraq attack lie comes undone. James, all the media moguls falling by the wayside again, as I think you and I in our New World Next Year episode talked about the trade agreements, and we talked about all our phony leaders being outed and falling by the wayside. And in some ways, a lot of these things are already kind of happening. So on the flip side, antidote to that and to these tainted media dinosaurs, James Corbett, Dan Dix, and Luke Rakowski invite you to Change Media University. James, if you'll tell folks about that.
Well, it's going to be preceding the Anarchapoco conference in Acapulco, Mexico, coming up at the end of the month. So registration is still available, as far as I know, at anarchapoco.com, unless it's filled up in the last few days. But yes, come out. Don't whine about the media. Don't complain about it. Be it. And it's easier than you think. Trust me, I'm not a particularly talented guy, but I can do it. You can do it. Trust me. So please come out. And if you can, make it down to Acapulco. It's not only going to be an interesting conference, but it's also going to be an interesting Change Media University bootcamp.
That's going to do it for this episode 219 of New World Next Week. James, it is always a pleasure, and I love trying to bring these stories and discuss these and hopefully get the discussion going for all the folks out there.
Awesome. Looking forward to it again next week. Thank you.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.